Blog Talk Radio.
This is Yasa Sagonige, a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. Folks, the scriptures say my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look. OCO, Ginalee, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Tonight, I have a a great honor to be speaking with Blue Otter. And he is a friend of our elk guest, Red Elk. And we're going to be we have so many things that we want to discuss with you tonight. One of the things we wish to discuss, of course, naturally, is going to be Cherokee prophecy. But also we're going to touch on what the Cherokee, the Catholics, the Tibetan, Islamic, the man calendar all have in common.
Yeah.
You're going to be really surprised after you get done, or while you're listening to Blue Otter, because he has some things that he is going to tell you tonight that I know that is you're going to find just fascinating.
Well, there's no coincidences.
No, absolutely not. And hello? Hello there, Blue. You want me to call you Blue Otter? Or okay. And why don't you explain to some of the people about yourself a little bit and what you're doing?
Well, I am 50 years old, and I live in South Central Missouri in the Ozarks. I'm a legally recognized Cherokee Indian. And my feet were put on this path. Let me preface this by saying that I was raised white. But the beliefs that my parents instilled me with, I found out later, were very Cherokee. They always had the attitude, you know, you don't need to go into a church to worship. And my mother was kind of psychic, and she was interested in prophecy. And through the years, I just kind of started collecting them. And when my first wife was in the process of passing away back in late 94, 95, and after she passed away, I got my first computer and decided that I was going to put together a newsletter of prophecies. And at that point, it was 16 pages back in front typewritten. And I just started. I lived in Moab, Utah at the time, and I just gave them away to people down at the food co-op and around town. And I wrote on there, "Hey, look, this is free, and you're welcome to reproduce this and give it to whoever you want to. And if you want to make a donation, fine. If not, fine." And within 6 months, I got a letter from Australia. That thing had gone clear around the world.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and then another month went by, and I got a letter from Dr. Leo Sprinkle.
Oh, really?
You ufologists know
him. Yeah, we all know him.
Leo wanted, he just said, "Hey, you know, keep me on your mailing list." And so I knew, hey, you know, this is something that people wanted to hear about. And so when I got my computer, I learned HTML and put up a website. And, mine was the first multicultural prophecy website on the internet, so it was put up, I think, in September of 96.
And speaking of websites, for all the listeners, if you want to follow along with what we're discussing tonight, Blue Otter does have a website that you can go to, www.prophecykeepers.com.
Right, it's plural, and prophecy with a C.
Yeah,
P-H-E-C-Y. Or they can do a Google search or Altavista search for Native Prophecy, and that'll take them over to my other website, which is Wovoga.com, and they can click on the book at the top of that site, which will take them over to Prophecy Keeper. See,
and you do have a special treat for some of our listeners, am I correct?
Yes, I do.
Well, you want to tell them about that first before we get going?
Well, exactly what you mean by treat.
Some of them that call in are they'll be able to get a download of your e-book.
Oh, yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, if you have people that call and ask questions, they're certainly welcome to, that. I'll take care of that personally.
Okay, great. As a matter of fact, I still need to download mine. You know, but I plan on it.
But the traditionally, what we're trying to do here is that traditionally spiritual information should be available free. Everything that's available in the e-book form is also available over on Mavoka.com. It's individual pages. But the ebook was put together because, hey, not everybody's on a computer.
Right.
And that's why I put Prophecy Keepers up. Matt Bear, I need to tell you
the founder of the modern American Indian Unity Movement. He was a Tuscarora and a lord of the Iroquois Confederacy, Sachem. And he traveled to as a merchant seaman all over the Western Hemisphere and made the contacts in the 50s and 60s that brought together indigenous elders from the South and the North and founded the White Roots of Peace Council. A book was written about him in the 70s by Doug Boyd. And 2 years after I put the original website up, I read his book that was written about him, which is called Mad Bear. And in there he said, you know, someday somebody's going to write a book, and they're going to go all around the world and collect all the prophecies from all the indigenous nations and all the nations of all the world and compare and contrast them. He says, then we will really have something.
Looking for a common denominator.
Right. So I thought, well, gee whiz. Mad Bear was a personal friend of, I never met anybody, he was a close friend of Roland Thunder, who was one of my first traditional teachers. So that's really how the whole thing got rolling.
Now, you gave me some information that I think that our listeners will be thrilled over, because so many, you know, say that they're Cherokee, but, you know, of course, naturally, you know, they're maybe three-quarters white or even seven-eighths white, and they have just a small amount of the Cherokee blood. But the Cherokee have a law, don't they, of the one drop of blood law?
Right. Traditionally, and this is explained by Atikuakula, who... about 1750, he was our leading chief, and he himself was called the Little Carpenter because he was small. Cherokees usually are large. We intermarried with the Mound Builders at one point after fighting a war with them, and so that's the reason why we're tall. But he was a very skilled diplomat, and he had been adopted in from one of the Algonquin tribes, and he visited a couple times back home to Canada, but he knew about the adoption laws. He read into the record. He wanted to, I think he saw what was coming with assimilation. And he explained that traditionally a Cherokee was considered to be a Cherokee out to the 11th generation. Now that's a long time.
Yeah.
And one drop of blood. Basically, a full-blood Cherokee is someone who thinks like a Cherokee. And the scientific research that's happened in the last few years that's been done by archaeologists and ethnologists shows that, you know, there are 5 to 7 million Cherokees. We have the largest Indian tribe in the world. Yeah, we're scattered to the wind. We'll learn a lot of factions. But you can be proud of your Cherokee blood. But the thing that not a lot of people know is that we've always been a rope that was braided with a lot of different colors. When Cortez arrived in 1540, or Hernando de Soto, rather, in the records that he sent back to Spain, he remarked that there were red-haired, green-eyed,
yeah,
blonde-haired, blue-eyed kids running around to the Cherokee towns at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So we migrated here from across the Eastern Ocean, according to Atikuakula, before the Stone Age man.
Yeah.
So if we first went to Mexico, first we came to what's now North America, and then down to Mexico, and then back up here. We've been up and down twice. And archaeological research has now scientifically proven back 800 years, and it will be proved back 1,500 years, that the original homeland of the Cherokee was in the Ozarks and not, as it was supposed, in the southeast.
Mm-hmm. In the Ozarks.
Right.
And speaking about that, do you think that we should bring our listeners in on what we were discussing about
Absolutely.
What the Cherokee found in the Ozarks when they first moved there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the story, I came across the story years ago about the Cherokee, when they first came into the land, came across they considered a man-type creature with blue skin and moon eyes. And I have been looking for years for information on that and have never been able to find anything. and I never gave up on the story. And then tonight, I was speaking to you before we started the show, and I asked you, and you had the information on the on these people.
The Moon People.
And they're called the Moon People.
Right. When we moved into the Ohio Valley, we encountered gardens, and there were no people around, and so we kind of waited and watched, and we noticed that there was people that were seemed to just come up out of nowhere and were tending these gardens at night, and they apparently they were coming and going from underground, and that kind of explained the large eyes and the color of the skin, because when you live underground, well, for instance, in East Tennessee, there's a cave called the Lost Sea, and there are a trout in there, and it's an underground lake, and the trout have absolutely no pigment. And,
right.
So that explained the blue eyes and the blue skin and the large eyes.
Yeah. And but now the Cherokee at one point in time thought that they annihilated all of these. But then recently, though, you said that someone went down into some of these caves and
actually a couple of cavers that went down into a cave in northern Arkansas, and they reported. Now this is a very very deep cave, one of the deepest caves that's known. I think we're talking at least 5,000 feet down or a mile down.
Yeah.
And in their exploration, they were walking through a tunnel and some started throwing rocks at them. And trying to drive them away, and I guess they scared whoever it was away that was throwing rocks at them. But they said that as they got further down the tunnel, they encountered a rock wall, and inside the rock wall there was a glass tube that they could look into. And then the other side of the glass tube, it almost looked like it was a transportation tube. They could see buildings.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not alone. The Hopi say that the ant people protected them each time they, between changes of worlds. We're now in the fourth world and going into the fifth world, and they said that the ant people, and, you know, if you think about what an alien looks like, you know, large eyes and kind of a...
Well, they do. Well, now they do have that description of that one alien that looks like they call. I think that they're called insectoids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like a praying mantis. Yeah. Or even
like
the praying themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you think of an ant without the antennae, it looks an awful lot like a gray.
Yeah.
And they say these ant people have protected them. As guardians, each time that the earth rolled over, and there was a mass flooding, and protected them from the flooding, and this is in their Sipapu, which was either in the Grand Canyon or in the San Luis Valley. There's two traditions for where Sipapu was.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a, you know, John Red Hat told me, you know, among the Zuni and the Pueblo people, I mean, it's just. It's an established fact among the elders that know or that pay attention nowadays that space people, you know, the star brethren or whatever you want to call them, I mean, they're real.
Yeah. I totally agree with you on that. And I thank you so much for the information on these moon people.
You bet.
Because that is an important link.
It is.
That we needed to remember. That they're and apparently these subhumans I don't know exactly what you would call them because we don't know very much about them. I don't know if they would be considered star visitors or if they were actually here before we were, you know. And
good question.
Yeah.
You
know, so we
good
really
question.
Don't know.
Roland Thunder explained that the Cherokee. One of the reasons why they're such a large group is that we're a cosmopolitan group coming from a lot of different places, and we have some groups, clients with lighter skin, and you know, some have like the Wild Potatoes clan, which is really the Ketua clan. They tend to have webbed fingers a little bit and an inverted nose, and which is totally different. there's a tribe in South America that just flat comes right out and will tell you that they're from the Pleiades.
Uh-huh.
You know, I never expected. And these are people that have only been contacted in the last 20 years. They were in the forest, and either the Takuna or the Uwa people have said this, that they came from the Seven Sisters.
And for some reason, we just do not want to believe it.
Yeah, I know a lot of folks that do. There's a real anybody that gets involved with these teachings or teaches them gets attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And even that was prophesied. One of the Algonquin prophecies said that at this time, when people wanted to start to have answers, that some of the elders would be asleep and some wouldn't know what to say, some would be afraid. So you just have to kind of gird up your loins and go out and teach no matter what. I know John Red Hat ran into this, and here's a guy who the federally recognized Indian Cherokee Nation and the Nakatuba Band both, and he fought long battles with people that just didn't want to know. They didn't know and they didn't want to know.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
But everybody's coming around to us slowly. But, thanks to John. John was the person that got Chief Chad Smith a couple of years ago to make the statement that, hey, we need to stop calling people wannabes. I mean, that was something I believe that was started by Chief Matt Killer. And or maybe even earlier, but because the Trail of Tears basically rounded up people that were darker skinned, and if you had quarter blood or less, or married out of the tribe, you just didn't go.
Yeah.
Because you're able to elude capture, and most of the people that ended up in Oklahoma, the ones that did end up in Oklahoma, are the ones that are in political control over saying who's a Cherokee citizen. But when you get over wanting to be a citizen, and then knowing you're a Cherokee, that doesn't matter to you.
I came across this one person one time, and we were discussing the Native American lineages. And anyhow, he told me, he says, to be Native American Indian is not in the blood, it's in the soul.
It is.
You can't be born into it. You have to be born of it.
Well, one of the prophecies says that at this time, well, there's a couple of them. The Hopi prophecy said that at this time, that's already been fulfilled, because back in the 60s, the hippie generation got real interested in what was going on with the Hopi prophecy, and a lot of them gathered up to Nevada to Metatante, where Rolling Thunder was teaching. And it fulfilled the prophecy that War era whites would become Indians, would become very interested in that. So there's a real spiritual juxtaposition going on, and then you've got
basically that fits with the law of karma in reincarnation, because what you do to one, you'll come back as that one the following time.
So. Isn't that interesting? And then you've got, you have a literal rewrite of history going on too, some of the people in the American Indian movement, and a lot of infighting and problems there. And there's almost an attempt to make a pan-Indian Orthodox religion, I like to call it. And boy, have I been attacked on that. But hey, the elders that I talk to say, hey, you know, you're absolutely right. The elders that I knew, we're all active in AIM at the beginning, and they say, hey, they're just not doing what they're supposed to be doing, and a lot of destructive things going on. They've done a lot of good things and embarrassed themselves, but it's all part of the process.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And, excuse me, you know Red Oak then, right?
I do.
Yeah. And he's been on our bill a lot.
Yeah, to get him on your show. I know he wants to come on. We're going to get him on.
Yeah, well, you know what? Maybe what we can do with Ben is do a conference call.
Sure.
And all three of us can talk back and forth.
Yeah, he might. That man is such a spiritual powerhouse. You probably want to talk to him a lot.
Well, he was pretty much a torch burner. I mean, he kind of broke some of the traditions, if I remember right, and went out there on his own to spread the word of the prophecies I listened to many of his shows, he got into some trouble, didn't he, for what he was talking about, but I mean, he still went and did it, and because of it, I think that we are far wiser from what we've heard from
now there's a parallel here too, because the Bible says that at this time that this would be the time of the restitution of all things spoken of by all the mouths of the holy prophets, and the Hopi prophecy talks about at this time that all the old medicine societies would be resurrected, and so you have the Cthulhu Society had a prophecy also that the Cherokees would lead the Indians back to the Great Spirit, and that's what we're about. And the Cthulhu Society, actually, they were told by Creator that they would be the chief of all the Indian tribes in North America, and if any message were delivered to Indians, that it would come through the Cthulhu Society prophets, and one just died, Grandfather Red Hat just passed away on the 30th of December, and he fought a long battle, won some and lost some,
yeah.
Red Elk was an honorary member of the Twisted Hair Society, which is another word for the long hair clan that John belongs to. But, the Canadian Aboriginal elders and a lot of others going back to the 50s have said, look, now it is time. And the Hopi elders also said it is time for these prophecies to be fulfilled and also to be voiced all around the world in every language. And that's the only reason why I put these teachings on CD-ROM for people. Hopefully I'll get it in print sometime. But the only reason why we're raising money is because the elders mandated in the 50s that they wanted all the elders, all of the prophecies collected, put in one place, and translated in all languages. And machine translation is only about 55-60% accurate, so we're trying to raise money to get actual human translations of about 1,000 pages of information.
Well, maybe this show will help.
Sure, I'm sure it will.
And if I don't let you talk about these prophecies, I am afraid my listeners are going to start screaming at me. So,
what do you want?
Well, might as well. What is the most important?
Well, I think the thing that's on everybody's mind right now is the Mayan prophecy. There's a lot of interest in it. When you go on eBay, and you look up the different, you know, names for Indian tribes, you know, a lot of people are interested in the Hopi stuff, but man, you wouldn't believe the people that are looking for stuff that's Mayan.
Yeah.
You know, the books that have been written by Adrian Gilbert and some of these other guys that are, I mean, these guys are scientists, and what the startling discovery is that, of course, everybody's heard about the Mayan calendar and the December 2012 prophecy at the end of the Mayan calendar, and of course, there's some slop in there, you know, it's, but basically, the elders have it pretty well figured out that that's, that'll be the end date, and a lot of people think, oh, it's going to be the end of the world, and, you know, there's been a lot of things, you know, written, and, but here recently, the Mayan elders have, in the last few years, they've come out and they, what they're explaining, what's going to happen. And here's where we get into the parallel between the Mayan prophecy, the Tibetan Kali Chakra, the Hindu Kali Yuga, a lot of Catholic mysticism, things that have already happened. And as a matter of biblical history, I'm talking about the 3 days of darkness. The Bible, Book of Mormon, the Hopi prophecies all talk about, oh, and let's not forget the Quran.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just bowled over when I found out that all these people were talking about all the same thing. It was all going to happen, you know, within 20 years of the predicted date. And basically, what they're saying is that, Tom Brown's teacher, Stalking Wolf, and, you know, here's another guy that a lot of people say, oh, the guy didn't exist. But, you know, let me tell you, Tom learned stalking from somebody. And his teacher was, at that time, had been, he left the reservation and had been walking all over North America since about 1920. And he was shown that that there would be a worldwide sign that everyone would be given, a sign of red skies. And that would be the signal that, and of course at Garibandal, the children there were told that there would be a great sign that that everyone would be will see all over the world, and there would be an 8-day notice that would be given in the media. And then this further research that I've done is, it's turned up that all these other prophetic traditions also talk about this 3 days of darkness. And oddly enough, Henry Fonda's son, what's his name?
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Anyway, he made a movie back in the 70s, but I can't remember the name of it, but all I remember is that there's a futuristic, Peter Fonda. Movie about a society which basically had scientists, holy men, and they were the two poles of the society. And the scientists knew that there was going to be a darkness period where everything was going to go dark. And they were, you know, trying to convince the common people that, hey, this is okay. You know, don't go crazy. But the holy men didn't like, you know, the scientists getting the attention of the masses, so they kept saying, oh, no, this is a judgment, and this is horrible, and you're being led us, you know, the old scenario, mm-hmm. control the old. So when the darkness came, basically, the world went nuts, and everybody destroyed each other. And
communication naturally would have been down.
Mm-hmm. Everything. Everybody would have become scared, and this is what the Catholic mystics are saying, hey, you need to, when this happens, you need to know what's going to happen, you need to be prepared, and you need to pray, and, you know, and so all the information in the books is
voluminous. Well, to just interrupt you for just a second, because I don't want to forget this. I did an interview with a man by his last name was Sherman, and you can find it on BurlingtonNews.net, interviews with Sherman. Now, he wrote a book above Black, I believe it was called, and in it he talks about in the 60s, the government was working with this alien sector, and they were genetically manipulating these fetuses. you know, of the pregnant women. And they used these women in a family that were, they would be middle class, but when the children came of age to go to college, they wouldn't really be able to afford the college, you know, pay for their college. So naturally, they would join the service. And at that point in time, the government would, you know, grab them, you know, and tell, you know, reach out and help them out, and then tell them who they were, and then use them. And what it was all about was they were genetically manipulating these fetuses where they had these psychic abilities. And what it was for was the government felt that there was going to become a time, all right, where there was going to be this great blackout. And all communication would be down. And what they were trying to do was create this
a
psychic communication system with the help of the alien.
Sure.
And he was one of these children that they had manipulated as a fetus. And then when he grew up and after he was in after he was at Desert Storm, after Desert Storm, they brought him in, a captain brought him in and explained to him, this is who you are. Which totally, you know, can you imagine somebody telling you this? And at that point in time, he didn't even believe in aliens, UFOs. And so anyhow, but they said, you know, he was completely human, except that he had been, genetically manipulated, you know, with the where he had this ability where he could communicate back and forth with them. So they put him into a room. You know, and of course there were various other ones that they'd done this with, but, you know, he couldn't talk for them because he only knew about what happened with him, where they put him into a room and worked with him where he was able to build up his skills, and they would sit him in front of, like, a computer screen, and a keyboard, and they would give him a message, and at that point in time, he would concentrate and send a message to the alien. The alien would send back a message, and then he would type it out on the screen. So anyhow, I just wanted to bring that up because I thought that was quite fascinating, because you're talking about a time coming that there's going to be a darkness.
Well, these voices have been watching over us, you know, for a long time, and you know. I hate to use the old Star Trek analogy, but they can't. And I've learned in my own relationship with Creator, because when he started talking with me, in every few months, it seems like around the solstices, I'll get a message, and, you know, I'll be told some things, but they can't interfere with your free agency, so they have to drop hints. They have to use mental imagery along with voice, but this all started with me back in 82 or 83, I guess it was 82. We're living up in Oregon, and a voice just woke me up one morning and said, an attempt is going to be made on the life of your wife during the dark of the moon. And this is the first shot across my bow that Creator gave me. So I woke up and I said, Joanne, you know, get a calendar, you know, and when's the next dark of the moon period?
We'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, this is Will Blueauer speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony, so it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system, That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
And we're all paranoid, and of course there was a big church meeting that weekend, and we were worried it was going to happen then, and we almost got rear-ended that weekend, so we figured, you know, maybe that was it. And then about 6 weeks later, I noticed when she was dressing that there was a little bit of lint mixed with blood coming out of her right breast. And she was then diagnosed with precancerous changes, and they took the right breast immediately. And I didn't realize that there's only a 20% chance of surviving past 10 years at that point with breast cancer. And she lived 13. But, you know, she lost the other breast in 89. But the amazing thing about it is that I've seen her many, many times. She said that whenever I needed her, she would show up. And even times when I thought I wasn't going to need her, like, you know, my son had he's got the same heart condition that President Bush has, where your heart can go into arrhythmia and just kind of flop around for a while. Well, the night before that happened to my son Joe, when he's off at school this year, she shows up, and she warns me about things and has led me certain directions. And after she passed away, I had forgot totally about that voice that told me she was going to die during the dark of the moon. So in front of two close friends that were her friends too, you know, I said, hey, I remember I had this dream back in 82 and heard this voice, and I said, will you go over and check the calendar? I said, I'm almost afraid to. And Betty, who I'm now married to, went over the calendar. She said, well, she says, Scott, you're not going to believe this. And my name is Will Scott. And she said the day she died was in the middle of a dark, three-day dark of the moon period. Hmm. So, you know, but I, you know, you talk about people being woken up, you know, seventh generation prophecy of, you know, people with Indian blood being woke up. But it was my, I knew, I was given my Cherokee genealogy when I was 16. My great uncles had preserved it from the 20s and 30s. Passed it down, and then about 84 or so, a very obviously full-blood Indian man appeared to me in a dream, in a sitting position, and he had a white stone around his neck, and there was a key embedded in the stone, and his name was written in the stone, but I wasn't allowed to remember the name after the dream. But he said to me, he says, when are you going to do something about Gardner Green's genealogy? And so I woke up. And, you know, of course, that was a kind of a slap in the face. And so, you know, I started, you know, looking around for my cousins. And since then, I've found a lot of my cousins. And then somewhere in the back of my mind, for many, many years, I just knew that there had to be one family somewhere that were cousins of mine that remembered some of the old ways. And then I guess after about 10 years or so, after I put information up about this ancestor on the internet, I was contacted by a fellow by the name of Bill Chance. And he explained that Gardner Green was his ancestor also. And he explained that Gardner, in 1777, the Warrior Society of the Cherokee Nation seceded from the nation over land claims. Okanaskota was chief at that time, and his son Dragon Canoe took umbrage at all the land that was being given away, and went against his dad, and the warriors left the Cherokee Nation and went just over across the river into the Creek Nation, settled around Chattanooga and also down in Alabama and down around Stone Mountain, and they almost brought us to a standstill, the American Revolution. If they had joined the North, they sent warriors north to be with the Shawnee. They had the Shawnee, Cherokee, Uchi, everybody but the Chickasaws was involved in this. And then after Dragon Canoe died in late 1790s, Tecumseh, who was his grandson, a lot of people don't know that Tecumseh was his grandson, picked up this torch and took the teachings and try to get people to stick with their original set of instructions. And you'd be shocked to find out how many Indian nations were told that the white man was coming, you know, right down to what kind of hat they were going to wear. Ojibwe and the Hopi were both told that...
Well, the Aztecs were told.
And they were told that when these people came, that they would bring some good things and that they would learn from each other. But if they came bearing a cross that was out of balance, in other words, it had one leg longer than the other, the Hopi were told that they would be out of balance and that there would be trouble. But if they came with a more like a Celtic-looking cross, there would be more imbalance, and they could learn from each other. So, unfortunately,
wrong cross.
You know, they came with the out of balance cross, and they're just now beginning to want to learn from Indians. And but now you have the problem is the same problem they have in South Africa. The saying of South Africa back in the old days of apartheid was when the whites turn from hating us, well, we have turned from loving them.
Mm.
So, you have the same problem over here, whereas the Indians wanted peace in the 1800s and 1890s, and now so many of them have the generational inbred anger. You know, the angry Indian complex, I think a lot of people call it. And then, you know, the whites, now the whites want to go to them for teaching, and the mixed bloods, you know, a lot of them get turned away. And and that's a big reason why I'm taking the arrows in the back and the front and every other.
This is where I don't understand discrimination. Discrimination to me is just beyond me, because I'm a firm believer that for each life you're different. At one life you're an Indian, another life you're black, another life you're white, one life you're a male, another female. You have to go through all these to learn the lessons of that particular race so that you can become balanced. And so, like, if you're white now, like, a lot of times, the black say, well, you know, you're white, you don't understand. Well, they don't know if I understand because I may have been a black during that time, you know, and I may actually understand more so than they do because they could have been the white at that time, you know. So, I still not understand discrimination.
Indians are the only group of people that have a constitutional or a legal right to discriminate.
Yeah.
And they've only gotten their rights to practice their religion back, you know, since the late 70s. And when they got it back, you know, now comes the attitude now, you know, is that, oh, this is our religion and you can't have it. And if you're using it, you know, you're committing genocide and all this other kind of stuff. Basically, you know, I call them born-again Indians, and because, well, you know, when AIM first started, it was started by Sioux Indians up around Minneapolis. You know, they have some good elders, like Eddie Benton Benai. You know, he was one of the founders, and he's one of the people that talk about prophecies and some of their other elders. But, you know, these younger Indians, they went to... I believe it was Pine Ridge or Rosebud, but they went to see Leonard Crow Dog's father. And Crow Dog's another guy that's championed mixed bloods, you know, being able to Sundance and taking a lot of heat. But, you know, he showed up on the doorstep and they want to know, well, what should we do? And, you know, we're going to start fighting for our legal rights. And he just looked at him and said, well, have you certified yourself? And they looked at each other and said, huh? You know, and they said, well, you know, go purify yourself, come back, we might have something to talk about. So, and this is the reason why the Inipi ceremony has become so popular, and the prophecy that it would go around the world. You've got probably more people going into Inipis in Europe than you do here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And you got a lot of Indians here in the States screaming, bloody murder, oh, you know, you're taking our religion, you're super getting, you know, it's maddening.
Yeah. Well, I think that we all have to overcome that.
Yeah.
You know, we have to.
It was prophesied. It was, all of this was prophesied. It's just amazing.
Now, going back to before I interrupted you on the, there's going to be a time of black or darkness,
mm-hmm.
And then all communications will go down,
mm-hmm.
and everyone will go into chaos.
Hopefully not.
And they expect that to happen in 2012 then?
Yeah, what's been discovered more recently, and now imagine, if you will, that you're standing outside, and and you're looking up. If you're familiar with the planets, you might notice that the planets basically are along a line in the sky, and it's it goes through the Milky Way, but it's something called the plane of the ecliptic, and there's also a celestial equator that. If you think of our galaxy as being a sphere itself, it has a celestial equator, it has a celestial meridian, and the Mayans knew a long time ago that where the celestial equator and the celestial meridian cross, there is something called it's being called a dark rift. The Mayans call it the Black Road, but what science has discovered lately is that this is an area of very, very dense material that a lot of light doesn't get through. And what's been discovered is that at the end of December 2012, the sun will rise that morning. As it comes over our horizon, it will be lined up. With, of course, we won't be able to see it because, you know, the sun's coming up. But, you know, every day the sun rises someplace different, but it will rise right to those two points intersect. And the elders have said, look, there's going to be a lot of earth changes at that time. And they're trying to teach us to be prepared for it and not to be afraid because, you know, the fear... You know what the Bible says about, you know, in the last days, that if you're afraid, you'll be caught in a snare.
Yeah.
But what we found out in our research is that in a lot of different traditions, and there's actually historical accounts, that if you live in a group with a group of people in a certain manner, and even Edgar Cayce talked about this, he said that someday people would learn to live the kind of communism that Jesus taught. He says, not communism like it is in Russia. He said, but the kind that Jesus taught. And then when you start going in the old records, you realize that that for about 50 years in Jerusalem, that the Christians lived this this way. They sold everything they had, and they gave all of the proceeds to the apostles, and they lived in a common community called All Things Common. And there are promises of divine intervention if you can live in a manner like this. You know, in the 1880s, there was a sweeping vision given to a man in Utah that showed that what was very obviously a chemical attack, and you can read about that in the book, it's startling to think that somebody in 1881 or 2 saw what was this vision showed what nowadays we would recognize as a chemical attack, because the only thing that kills that quickly is a chemical attack. And if you read the vision, you'd say, oh my gosh, that's a chemical attack. It would bring up the vision of what Saddam Hussein did to the Kurds, you know, the yellow rain. Anyway, in this vision, you know, people were just dying everywhere. You know, a lot of these prophecies correspond with a time of year when everybody sits down at a big meal. You'd be absolutely stunned to hear the different kind of. And there's actually a guy over in Europe, a German guy, And he came to the same conclusion that I did, that
we'll see you. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of wisefoods.org. Our native ancestors stored away lots of food in case of emergencies. Thousands of years of sad experience taught them to be prepared. The traditional Hopi stored food enough to last for 7 years. So did the early Mormons. Nowadays, everyone unwisely depends on supermarkets for their food supply, and few people know that there is only a 3-day supply of food in the American food supply chain. Now, should some disaster befall us that would cause the big trucks like I used to drive to cease delivering our food, you'd be in big trouble. It is for these reasons that my family purchased a year's supply of 3 different breakfasts and 10 delicious dinner entrees from wisefoods.org. These foods are freeze-dried right at the field where they are picked and processed and are fresher and more nutritious than any supermarket food. You just add hot water, and they're good for 25 years being stored. A year's supply from wisefoods.org fits in an area about 4.5 feet by 4 feet by 18 inches. I can literally get it all in the back seat area of my Honda Civic. If you stay at home, you won't need to go to a FEMA refugee center should some disaster happen. Did you know that David Ramsey, David Gallagher, Laura Ingram, and Michael Medved have also invested in Wise Foods? Why don't you visit wisefoods.org today and see why.
You know, these things were going to kind of begin in the fall and go into the winter. Even the Bible says, you know, pray that the travail doesn't happen in winter. Well, that's a hint that it's going to. And, in this vision of the chemical attack, it said that he just saw these mass deaths, but he said that there was one group of people living in a camp. There was two tents. One was a purple cone-shaped tent, and the other was a white tent and a cone-shaped tent. Well, yeah, that's a teepee. And there, you know, you get involved with the old Mormon prophecies about the Indian people coming together with white people. And they said the people that lived in the community of tents lived with the daily communication with the Great Spirit, with their Creator, and that they were preserved from the disaster. Mm-hmm. And then you have the Catholic mystics and a lot of other people that have explained this holy way of life, which is almost a monastic way of life, but it's a way of life where everybody's equal. Everybody brings together their talents. They might sell things that they own and get together and build a community, like the Amish or whatever. And these ideas, cooperatives are what built this country into what it is today. They're not real popular today because of ideas of profit taking, but my books are a trilogy, and the third book is called All Things Common. The tribal way of life that Jesus taught, and it explains how to the recipe for how to live this way, and how to put yourself underneath these promises of divine intervention, including being divinely hidden.
But then we have to ask ourselves, what is the divine intervention? Is it a God source intervention, or is it alien intervention?
Well, you know what they say about technology. You know, they say that if an advanced culture came along today and showed us their technology, you know, we wouldn't be able to distinguish it from magic.
Yeah.
So whatever you want to call it, George Washington and his vision at Valley Forge saw three world wars, and that this red fog came up to across the ocean the first time, about halfway across the Atlantic, and then it receded World War I, and then it came right to the shores of America in this other great war, and then retreated. He says, but the third time, he says, we were attacked from all four directions. And at this point, you know, America's becoming very, very unpopular around the world.
It sure is.
And, you know, Hopi prophecy says that because of, you know, you call it karma or whatever you want, it says because of what America did to the American Indian, that the country that had the sign of the, see, the swastika is an old sign that comes out of India. It was all before World War II, the Mexican National Guard wore a swastika patch on their shoulder.
Yeah.
It was an old Indian symbol.
Yeah, it's a power symbol.
And it was a counterclockwise swastika. But anyway, they said that if the country of the sign of the swastika and the country of the sign of the rising sun could not punish America, that the country with the largest population of the color red would be sent, and they would cover the land like ants. And they said, you know, when this happened, you know, to go in your houses and not come out, Mormon prophet Joseph Smith talked about a time when the heathen Chinese would invade, and if great care were not taken, and this is coming. This is going to happen. You know, Randolph talked about it, but he talked about the divine intervention that would happen when they got here. But you got to be living right as a people to qualify.
Yeah. Yes, you do. The government, we know, has been building a lot of underground facilities. Does that have anything to do with it? Of them foreseeing something happening to the surface of the United States, where they feel that they'd be more protected, their special people more protected underground?
Yeah, and they're smart to do so, too. One of the things that I was told by Creator, and after 1981, my wife and I started amassing food storage, and as we moved around the country, I mean, we had all kinds of food.
Well, now the Mormons are already prepared for this.
Yeah,
I used to live in Phoenix, and up there in the White Mountain area of Arizona, and that's Mormon country, and they have underground tunnel systems just stored to the max with food.
It became in the 80s. It kind of fell out of fashion, and I knew a family that whose daughter married a son of a general authority in the Mormon Church, one of the apostles or whatever. But anyway, the two fathers were talking one day. I got this from the horse's mouth. The two fathers were talking one day about, well, what are we going to buy for the kids for a wedding present? And the guy who's just a general member of the church says to the apostle, well, let's get him food storage. And, the apostle says, he's loud. He says, oh, that's passe. So there's not a whole lot of compliance anymore, with that food storage. And, originally, the message when it first came out, it was 7 years food storage. That's what the Hopi store was.
Yeah.
And then it became,
My mother's generation, that was a common way of life
because
they had the root cellars.
That's right.
And everyone had, my mother always said, you always keep 7 years of food storage.
Yeah, grains and corn.
Yeah.
The basics, salt, grains, corn, beans, that stuff's not real expensive. And,
no.
If you're going to get it, you better get it quick because one of the prophecies is that the last 3 or 4 years before, and this has already happened, this rust, I think they've tracked it down, came from India. There have been problems with the wheat crops the last few years.
Yeah.
And it said that in the last year, the wheat crop was going to be between, 25% of what it was, 2-3 years before. So, people are going to, number one, you need a good mill, something that's, and there again, I've got, my proxy ebooks are only about 20 megabytes, but I have another 600 megabytes of information on my CDs about, what to do, how to do it, food recipes, low-tech lifestyle, everything you can possibly imagine about it.
And now, we'll have an official website set up for you. When people go on our broadcast page, they just go down to interviews, click on your name. It'll take them on to a special website I'll have set up for you. And the links to get these books will be right there. So people will be able to go right to burlingtonnews.net and find and find your books.
Yeah, and they'll be able to. There's a database on how to figure out how much food you need and what to buy. But if they're going to start doing it, they need to start thinking about it now. And the elders have been pounding on this. They said, you know, the Hopi elders came out with 10 things about 10 years ago. They said, hey, these are things that you think about. A Chumash elder, they gave the message to a Chumash elder, and she's giving it out. But, you know, they said, hey, you know, where do you live? Where's your water? You know, do you know your garden? And, you know, to have a good garden, you know, it takes 2 to 3 years to know your garden. And so people need to start thinking about gardening.
Well, and then, of course, you have all your people that live in the city, and they cannot garden.
Well, then, you know, like I said, they need...
But, of course, the biblical prophecy says flee the cities.
Yeah, and it's time to start thinking about, you know, not everybody's going to be able to leave the cities, but they can sure think about finding some friends that do live in the country.
Well, that's it. They can, I spoke to another lady, I believe she was out of England, I can't quite remember, I think it was, where was she? Italy. And she said that when the time comes, she says, what you're going to see is communities, people all coming together and helping each other.
Gordon Michael Scallion saw this.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lady.
Patricia Corey.
Right. Well, back in the late 20s or early 30s, there was a woman. She was a non-Mormon lady that went to the dedicated, before a temple dedicated, the Mormon temple dedicated, they let people come in and see it. And she had a vision in there, and it was written up. Her name was Saul Gardisto. She was a Quaker lady. And she was shown what was going to happen. She said that the geological changes would begin in the Northwest. And, of course, now we know about the Indian prophecies that said that when the little sister whispers, the grandfather will speak. Well, Rainier is the grandfather mountain. And,
I don't know the prophecy. You want to explain that?
Well, that was it. That when the little sister whispers, and the little sister, you know, the Indians know that was Mount St. Helens.
Oh, okay.
And, but the rest of the prophecy is that after the little sister whispered, and if that explosion was a whisper, you can imagine what would happen. Redout talks about what happens when Rainier goes. And when Rainier goes, there have been people, a lady called into the Art Bell show sometime last summer, and she said, there are several people, and you got to remember that when people are getting inspiration or revelation, it will always come in twos or threes. This is a law. It's written in the Bible in Amos. It says that surely God will do nothing without he will tell his servants, the prophets. So there will always be a warning. It's just like this Quaker lady I told about. She said that the last world war would be between the so-called followers of Christianity against the so-called followers of Mohammedanism.
Really?
You know, there is nothing that's going on today that we haven't been warned about.
Yeah.
But anyway, she said that several people have been told in the Northwest area that there'll be one puff of smoke that will belch out of Rainier, and they said when that happens, get out.
Get out.
Get out of the Seattle-Tacoma area because it's going to blow shortly after that.
Well, you heard that, folks. So if you're in that area, you know what to do.
Yeah, and you got to remember, you're talking, you know, 100. There's good things and bad things that happen after volcanic explosions. After St. Helens went off, they were growing apples. You know, ate the most luscious and wonderful apples.
Western
Washington.
The volcanic soil is your most rich soil there is.
It's great stuff.
Yeah.
But you got to deal with the ash, and it's hard to breathe, and so. But you know what? The thing I want to emphasize is that if you don't need a medicine man or a priest or an avatar or somebody between you and the Creator.
Right.
This is the time that people need to establish their own direct link with the Creator. It can be done. I've done it. I know other people, hundreds of other people that have done it and are doing it. You know, Jesus said, my sheep know my voice.
Yeah.
You can get that, but you gotta do the right time. You gotta do the praying. But the thing about it is having the patience to wait for an answer.
Yeah.
That's what I had to do.
And then also being aware enough that you can watch the signs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had to learn that. My first wife taught me. When I first married her, you know, she knew about living by the Spirit. And, you know, whenever a door gets slammed, another one opens.
Well, I'll tell you, talk about watching signs. This is the first time I brought it up, but I think it's appropriate. Something's going on. I don't know what, but maybe you've noticed it too. The name South Africa keeps popping up. Have you noticed that? Oh, well, maybe it's just with me. But for the last, geez, I'll bet you in the last week, basically I never really paid that much attention to South Africa or, you know, the name or anything. But all of a sudden it's just, you know, I'm getting all this.
You're just being conscious of it, yeah.
It just keeps popping up. It just keeps popping up all the time. And I do. I watch the signs. And if I see something popping up all the time, then I say to myself, okay, that's something to pay attention to.
Well, a lot of people are seeing this 11-11.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they don't know that, you know, 11 is the number of the teachings of totemism.
Well, just kind of keep your eyes open, ears open for something going on with South Africa. I don't know. Maybe there's an awakening there with the country. I don't know. Something's going on, you know.
Something's probably going on. You just have to watch.
Yeah.
You know, you know. One of since I became a, you know, born again Cherokee, I call myself. You know, I was, you know, years ago I was watching that movie Squanto. You know.
Uh-huh.
And you know, Squanto's over in England because he stows away, and he's with a bunch of monks, and you know, he's out riding a horse one day, and this. Hawk comes down and flies low in front of him, and he knows that that's his warning that something's going to happen. And, you know, here comes the local bad guys to sack the, looking for him and to cause problems. Well, one day, you know, I was living in southern Utah, and I was headed into town because I lived in south of this one area that was going to go up shopping. And I was I was driving in front of the state prison at Gunnison, Utah. And this tremendous wind came up, and just as this red-tailed hawk took off from my right, flying toward my left in front of my car, and I mean he just went almost all the way down and touched the ground. And of course, this similar thing happened. I drive truck for a living, and about 3 weeks before John Red Hat died, an owl flew in front of me. So these things are real.
Yeah.
But
so
anyway,
speaking about that, I have to tell you this story. I was Brad and I, we go to Arizona every year because we have a home there up in the White Mountains as well. We're living here in Wisconsin because of Brad's job here. But my heart is in the Southwest. But anyhow, so Brett always takes me back every year. And we always go up into the Superstition Mountains because I love climbing up in there. And we had gotten up to this high peak, and Brad had gotten a little bit ahead of me. So I decided, well, let him keep walking. I'm going to take a break. So I sat down. And across the path was this, I thought an eagle, you know, or a hawk, you know, that was over there. And because it was so far in the distance, you know, that I really couldn't make out what it was. But I decided to send it messages, you know. So somehow I felt connected to it. So I turned around, and I sat there, and I gave it my love, you know, and blessings, you know, and just to say hello, you know, greeting. Next thing I know, it comes back my way, okay, and it flies over where I am, and it starts circling me and getting lower and lower and lower.
Which way is it going?
Oh, I don't know. I think it was going, let's see, how was it going? I think it was, I can't tell you. I'll have to think on that. But anyhow, it came, and it got so low that I could see the step. It was, you know, on it. But, you know, it wasn't a hawk, and it wasn't an eagle. It was a buzzard.
Yeah.
Scared the heck right out of me because I thought, oh my gosh, you know what, you know, because, you know, and I yelled at it, you know, to make it leave, you know, because, well, first of all, you know, I'm thinking, well, maybe, you know, he thinks that, you know, well, here's this crazy lady out here, you know, on a, you know, the high, you know, up on a mountain peak, you know, and she's sitting here. And, but anyhow, the buzzard had to have picked up my message.
Sure.
And because it was so far away. Well, but what it meant, I have no idea. I don't know if it was. I think it was just a mental link that I had made, and it probably surprised it, and so it decided to come over to me and check me out more.
Sure.
To find out what it was that I had that could make that connection with it.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
Well, after that red tail dipped down in front of me, you know, it was 8 or 9 miles into town and there wasn't a whole lot. And so, I mean, nothing happened in the first 5 minutes, so I kind of relaxed. And then I got to the middle of the next town with Mankind. Well, her people were in Texas.
Oh, I thought they were up here in the...
No, they may have gone back. They migrated back and forth, about half of the Chickamauga Cherokees. You see, there's been several migrations. In 1721, about half the nation split and left to what is now Coahuila, Mexico, at the base of the Rocky Mountains. Then there was a group that also came over here in Missouri and Arkansas, and they were here. And then at the end of the 1790s, there was another group that came over here, and John Ross wrote about the Cherokees on the St. Francis River. But the tradition was Cherokees left the East, beginning in 1721, there was even a group that went up into Idaho. And there's a lady up there who was one of the earliest members of AIM by the name of Earth Thunder. And in 1951, about 70 members of her hunter-gatherer group, all but her and two other children, were all killed by a bunch of many whites that wanted, you know, they drove them out of the Sawtooth Mountains. And she was taken into Boise and put through an orphanage, and now she's teaching up out of Boise.
Yeah.
And she's been all over the world, Australia several times. And,
yeah.
But no, the Texas Cherokees, they have a 2.5 million acre land grant. It's now what's Cherokee County in East Texas. But, you know, after Houston left office, Mirabel Lamar saw to it that they were killed and driven out. Some of them went into Mexico, most of them went into the hills, and a lot of them are still there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, that's what I'm trying to call. That's what my research is on, connecting the red-haired race with the kingship line from the Star Visitors.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people say it's the Anunnaki, but I'm not quite sure. We just, I was just working on the site last night. Apparently there's a...
King David was right here.
Yeah.
And,
There's a lot of the Egyptians that they found pharaohs that were red-haired and blonde-haired.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, they found the red-haired mummies in China.
Mm-hmm.
Red-haired mummies in Canary Island. And I've been able to trace the red hair and blonde hair back to the Lemurian times.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it goes way back there.
Yep.
And then and then I'm able to take it from, I took from Lemurian to Atlassian, from Atlassian to Abram, from Abram, they joined with the Phoenicians. From there, they spread out.
The Phoenicians were known as Redmen.
Yeah. And they spread out, went up into the northern countries, which would have been Europe. Then from there they went down, and they were to spread the seed.
Yep.
And they said that they were to leave signs, road signs, and the road signs was anything that you found. They put Dan and everything. You know,
yeah, every place in Europe that has the suffix or prefix of Din, Dan, Don. Dunkirk, Danube, Dinwiddie, those are all place names that were Dan was.
Yeah. And Odin, you know, mm-hmm. Odin comes from Dan.
Tamar Tepe married King Harriman, the Orphean of the Harriman. He was a prince of Judah and Dan, and he was a ruler of Northern Ireland. Zedekiah, King Zedekiah, who was the last de jure king of Israel, sent his cousin Jeremiah with Tamar Tepe and her sister Skada, and she was put off the boat, married Harriman the next day, and Skada was dropped off and married into the Milesian line of kings in Spain.
Yeah.
Jeremiah disappeared with a large mysterious box headed west.
And then you've got your serpent bones.
Yep.
You know. And everything you see.
Serpent is a symbol of the healer.
Yeah.
Indians will tell you that, you know, a lot of Christians are snakes, you know, evil. But no, that's not true. What symbol was it that was raised up on the stick when the Israel was being bitten by fiery serpents? They were told to look at the brazen serpent that was raised up on the stick. All they had to do was look.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I tell people.
Well, Pharaoh and Moses, it showed a good serpent and a bad.
That's where the caduceus symbol of the healer came from. And the serpent is like, there's two claimants to the morning star. You know, Satan claims he's it, Christ does too.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, that's what I try to do is go with the tribe of Dan, link it together, because I think that the tribe of Dan spread their seed throughout the world, and that seed you'll be able to find in the red mirror, and if that's true, then that would validate the claim of the Cherokee and many of the other Indians here in the United States that they do have they are the lost tribe because the tribe of Dan actually is the lost tribe of Israel.
Yeah, there was the Bat Creek stone, which is a proto Hebrew stone that it was a stone that had proto Hebrew symbols that lay around a museum for a long time until somebody turned it over and looked at it was on the opposite side, and you know the picture of that was on the front page of the Jerusalem Post a couple of years ago. But the halakhic authorities in Jerusalem, they know exactly where everybody went.
Well, sure they did. Well, because if I remember right, there was the people did the Great Exodus from Egypt. There was a split, and no one, and that's not talked about in your Bible and everything. All they talk about is Moses, but there was a double split there. Moses went one way, and Dan went to the north.
Yeah, there was a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom set up,
and
two and a half lost tribes were taken out of the northern kingdom.
Right, and the northern kingdom would have been Dan. But the thing was, when he left, he was told to leave the roads or signs along the roads so that we will be able to find you.
Those cairns,
mm-hmm.
those flat stones that you'll see elevated up on a tripod.
Yeah, and then as well as putting Dan in all the names.
Mm-hmm, and the place names. It's a sure sign.
They knew exactly. You know, and Moses was to go for the seed one direction, and Dan went the other, and with Dan went the Phoenicians as well.
Well, the Phoenicians were also known as the Phoenician Canaanites. Mm-hmm. Israel was to drive them out, but the real purpose Creator had in mind was is he wanted the Phoenician Canaanites to go out. You heard of the Piri-Reis map.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that map was obviously written before Antarctica was under the ice cap, which is 4,000 or 5,000 years ago.
Yeah, if you could take that all the way back, that map almost looks like the continent of Mu. So America.
Well, you know, it's got the sun on it, and the way Plato described Atlantis as being in the middle. If you take a picture from below the South Pole, the Antarctica sits right in the middle of all the world's oceans.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ketua origin story and prophecy says that we lived on the Cherokees lived on an island off the coast of South America
mm-hmm.
before we came here, tracking down the rumors of this healer that went all through the Americas. And a lady by the name of, or a person by the name of L. Taylor Hansen, it turns out her name is Lucille Taylor Hansen. And she was an attorney who lived in Los Angeles back in the 40s and 50s and wrote a lot in the pulp fiction books. But she also wrote this book called He Walked to the Americas, published in 1963, that introduced to so many people the stories of the healer, this same person that was ultimately known as Wakea, who now Koo, Cherokees called him the Pale One, the Ojibwe called him Chi Zeus.
And in Arizona, they also have the legends of him.
Right, just about every tribe does. But her father was the co-originator of the continental drift theory. And what she was able to find out was through her research was that most of the Indians. Believe that we came from some place called the Old Red Land.
Mm-hmm.
And she also wrote another book that if you can ever get a hold of it, it's called The Ancient Atlantic. Every once in a while you can find a copy on eBay for about $30 if you can get it. It's a fantastic book because it goes much further than He Walked the Americas and explains about this connection with Atlantis, Lemuria, or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But she befriended...
Well, the two cultures actually were there at the same time.
Right. Well, she befriended Asa DeLuigi, who was the, back in the 40s, was the traditional chief of, I believe, the Chiricahua Apaches. And she had an alabaster or stone box that was in her purse one day, and she showed this to Asa, and he looked at it, and when he saw it, his eyes got real big, and he said, would you sell that to me? And she said, no, well, this is an archaeological find, it's very valuable, and he says, no, you don't understand. He says that box, that comes from where we come from, because we recognize the symbols that are on it. The symbol of the trident. Wherever you see the symbol of the trident, you'll see this Native American symbol, and even some of the dancers have the trident. When the tribes left Atlantis, they were told that the trident would be a recognition symbol, and they were to wear the feathers, the fluff that the condor had around their neck, that white stuff.
Uh-huh.
They were to wear that in the headdress above their eyebrows so that they would be able to recognize each other. And Asa DeLuigi prevailed upon Lucille, we just got to have this. And she said, well, you know, she declined, but she went overnight and slept. When she came back the next day, his entire tribe had everything they owned out of the plaza. They were going to give up everything they owned to get this box.
Yeah.
And she just gave it to him. But the thing about it was, is he asked her, he said, do you know what became of the dirt that was in the box? And he said, said there should have been some red soil in the box.
Oh, really?
And she said, well, you know, whoever found it probably just dumped it out.
Oh.
He says that soil was from the old red land where we came from. And that Atlantic Ridge that went down underneath the ocean as the continents fled from each other was the land that was beyond the Pillars of Hercules. And, you know, we really don't know. There was a lot of land, subsequent lands that came up and went down, and Edgar Cayce talks about the lands that will be going down and others will be coming up. Oh, by the way, did you hear about the recent discovery that Edgar Cayce said that the 2004 a new root race would be established?
No.
I believe it's the rainbow race. I think this year is pivotal. I think the rainbow tribe is what's going to be happening.
Now, what would this be?
Well, the prophecy of the rainbow tribe, I think it's a two or three different name recognitions, but it's the coming together of all the races to understand each other's spirituality. Of course, this is a process that we've been going through for a long time.
Well, now, H.P. Blavatsky, she established U.S. citizenship based on the fact that she wanted to be a citizen here of the United States, because she said that it was here in the United States that the new race would begin. She said that, and of course it was true, because up until the United States was established and everyone stayed within their own race, their own color. And it was here in the States that the people started
the
mixing.
Pot.
Yeah, the melting pot was created through the mixing of the races. So, and of course, she got this prophecy probably from the Adepts, you know, because she spent so much time, you know, in Tibet and those areas like that. But
yeah, the Tibetans, they've got their, you know, they've got their prophecy about the land of the red man.
Well, so that would be, if that was the case, then the rainbow people would have been established much earlier than, what did you say?
Well, the hippies were, the movement was probably the beginning of it, but the hippie movement kind of morphed into the New Age movement. But
well, you see, but then if you think about it, it was in the 60s that we had the movements. That for being able to, you know, the blacks, you know, we're all being able to intermarry. And the Chinese are the same way. I mean, the Chinese, you know, just would not think of, you know, marrying outside.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
you know,
they've been some of the most racist people.
Yeah. But I mean, now, I mean, it's common, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't. No one thinks anything of it. But anyway.
Married a Filipino girl.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yes, but I mean, so I would think that the prophecy of the rainbow people started back then. You know,
well, the bigger ranch says that at the end, it says that what's going to happen here in the world is that slowly people will begin to form into little utopian societies. And eventually, you know, they'll spread out all over the world, and this comes back to this all things common that we're teaching people about.
Yeah.
And, I believe 2004 is a year that, things are going to be happening.
Well, it could be, too, that even though there was the generations, it takes so many generations for people to finally accept, you know, a new race.
Well,
and so maybe that race, the acceptance of the rainbow people come, you know, into being accepted. I don't know.
Well, if people intermarry, you know, then the ideas and traditions. I mean, when one Indian married another, the traditions that were transmitted to the child were the traditions of the mother. So that's the reason why Tecumseh. And I really don't understand there, but maybe just because his father was a chief, but he was kind of an exception. But you've got, you know, a lot of mothers teach a lot of different traditions, and got Scott Irish people marrying, my current wife's mom, you know, she married an Italian fellow back in the 40s, And, you know, back in the 40s, she was from Arkansas, and a Cherokee descendant, red-haired. And for her to even think about marrying an Italian back then, and we were going to war with Italy, and plus, you know, in the South at that time, an Italian was almost the same as a black person.
Yeah.
So, you know, but then, you know, nowadays, so people think nothing of marrying.
Well, there used to be a time that there was a sign at the border in California, no Okies allowed.
Right.
Yeah.
We'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, this is Will Blueauer speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony, so it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
And you know who Okies are? You know, there was a famous picture of a woman in the labor camps. And it was a picture of a woman, with her skin was sunburned and dark. She had a couple kids, and she was with a group of people that had traveled out to California after the bean crop, and there was a cold snap, and there was a lot of migrant workers that were starving to death, and the people in that, the security people in that area were just ignoring these people. And the picture was snapped, and it went in the magazines and newspapers.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what? That woman was Cherokee.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of people. It was because of the Depression, I believe. There was an exodus of all different types of people from Oklahoma that were going,
Arkansas, and Oklahoma, and they were called Okies. And
now
there, and that's what my wife grew up in the labor camps in California.
Yeah. And of course, I remember, I don't remember a time, but I remember reading at times that the Irish, were treated.
I play commercial country music, and a lot of the country music stars that I do, come out of Bakersfield. Billy Mize introduced me to Merle Haggard, and the two of them grew up in a wheat patch.
Yeah.
They grew up in migrant workers, living in the old railroad cars and tents, anything that they can live in.
Yeah.
Grapes are wrapped.
Times are tough.
And the times have changed. People are becoming more tolerant of each other. They're becoming more compassionate of each other, and they're beginning their understanding. It's time that everybody made a quantum leap.
Yeah.
I think 2004 is something's going to happen.
I'm looking forward to it because I think it's time that we throw discrimination aside and start, and separation, I should say, aside, and start becoming a whole and seeing each other not for our skin tone, but as our soul.
Well, I know I've come a long way. My mom was from Mississippi.
Yeah.
Her mother's father was the Grand Dragon of the state of Arkansas back in the late 20s, second richest man in the state.
Yeah.
Owned a Kentucky Derby winner. And, but that man, Charles Presley Wilson, he was a descendant of Pocahontas.
Yeah,
now,
really.
In Virginia, those people, back in the 30s, if you were Indian, you were either white or you were black.
Yeah.
Indians became whites, and now they're a lot of them.
And it's not just here in the United States. When I was down in Arizona, I was talking about doing some traveling down into Mexico, and this Mexican girlfriend I had, she's light-skinned, and she said, Mary, don't go down there. She says, it's dangerous. She says, it's even dangerous for light-skinned Mexicans to go into the interior because of the banditos. And there's a discrimination there against the dark skin compared to the light skin.
Yeah.
You know? And this is what we have to change.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing long-hidden ancient wisdom in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy CD-ROM set, including over 1,400 megabytes of low-tech information on gardening, seed saving, foraging, anti-terrorism, unarmed self-defense, and prudent ways, means, and places to inhabit. All the old forgotten low-tech life ways are taught on our CD-ROM, including the world's most extensive prophecy encyclopedias from all major religious traditions of both the Eastern and Western hemispheres, including a 1,000-page prophecy intelligence briefing with comparisons and analyses of prophetic information, offering advice for preparations for the coming worldwide 3 days of darkness, as well as forecasts of geological earth changes coming soon to a planet under you. So learn how to survive the coming changes by purchasing the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy here at prophecykeepers.com. The Prophecy Keepers CD-ROM set of two CD-ROMs is just $19.95, and you may use either a debit card or a credit card to order. You can order online, or you can use our toll-free order line in the United States and most of Canada, or another line we have especially set up for international orders. In the United States and most of Canada, you may dial toll-free 1-877-412-2012, 1-877-412-2012. Internationally, dial the USA country code 1, followed by 1-206-984-2286. That's 1-206-984-2286. Now be sure and stay tuned for the next important cultural message, or you can visit our website at prophecykeepers.com or do a web search for the terms Native Prophecy, and you can listen on demand to these same interviews at your leisure. About 24 hours of listening at absolutely no cost to you.
We'll see you.
Well, one of the neat things that's happening is that the Cherokee Nation of Mexico, it's Sequoia's grave. Now, people have known that he died in San Fernando. He was on the run from the Mexican authorities. He was on the run from the American authorities. And he was ill at the time. And he's another person that said that the people need to be living with all their lands and everything in common.
Yeah.
And that's the way that the Great Spirit wanted it. But for years, you know, Cherokees have gone down there trying to find out where he was entombed. And because there have been that group of that went to Mexico, and then more Texas Cherokees went to Mexico. But when a group went down in traditional clothing a few years ago, once they went down in traditional clothing, then the Mexican Cherokees opened up, showed them the cave, told them about the prophecy, and it's an amazing story. Then you end up with Presidente Fox. You know, the whole deal with the Indians in Chiapas and the massacres and everything going on down there. A lot of changes happened because of that. The political pressure. Cherokee Nation of Mexico is recognized, and the Mexican Cherokees are. Their aim is to teach people the real history of the Cherokees, and to try and establish a place where people can go and have the as close to the original Cherokee teachings transmitted. And, you know, CherokeeNationOfMexico.com. You can reach read it. It's, the story will be read to you. It's an amazing website.
Mm-hmm. And then you have something similar going on in Canada, right?
Yeah, Red Elk has been asked to the Crees. Well, for about 10 years, a lot of geologists have been running around up there because they knew that there were diamonds in that part of North America, which is the original North America, the Canadian shield. And then the government up there started kind of rewriting some boundaries, you know, with some of the reserves up there. But the Cree are sitting on diamond reserves, and they are getting, see, under British law, there is a way where you can actually secede, you know, like some people did in Australia. You can actually form your own micronation. The Cree are very close to that, and they heard Red Elk talking on Art Bell. They invited him to come over this last year. They examined him in a traditional manner, and they've asked him to become the, they call him the bridge. They want him to be the bridge between them and the rest of the world.
And he is a bridge.
He is. He's a wonderful fellow, and deserves
as well as yourself. As well as yourself.
And but he's I'll walk in his shadow. He's something else. There could be some exciting things going on there, because if the Cree get total independence, then they've asked him to be their ambassador for the world.
Yeah. Wow. What an honor, huh?
It is. It's a real honor. It's a real honor. I'm sure he'll be talking about that.
Okay, and I'm not going to let you get away on this one. I caught something in when you were talking about down in Mexico. They showed you the caves.
Yeah, they showed Chief Rogers. Chief Rogers has a traditional Cherokee clinic in just across from Laredo, I believe. Doctorofhope.com. And he was taught the Cherokee medicine by his grandmother, and I know another fellow in there's other Texas Cherokees that have kept those old teachings too. But Chief Rogers and his group were the group that were able to get federal recognition from the Republic of Mexico, and got a lot of people excited. But you know, I heard from kind of an inside source, and I won't tell you who, and I won't tell you who made the comment, but there was a comment made from a very high place in the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma when a certain elder asked a certain person high up in the government, hey, what do you think of those Cherokees down in Mexico? And he says, yeah, well, I've been on their website. He says, they're a little strange. Aren't you? They believe in all that old stuff. Well, that gives you the mindset. Most of the Cherokees, when most of them became Christianized, and a lot of them joined the Primitive Baptist Church, which was kind of a melding with the old Black River cults and the Baptist religion, the Cherokee religion, and then they more found their way into the General Baptist, and a lot of Cherokees are now fundamentalist Christians.
Yes.
And so they really shy away from anything that had to do with the old ways.
You know, though, it was a program that didn't work, because the objective was for the Europeans to come through, and what Native Americans they couldn't wipe out, they were to breed into, to change the color, to put the European blood in, and then educate them so in the white way, and forbid them to speak their language, thus, without having the language, they would eventually, through time, learn or forget the traditional ways. And, you know, and in many cases that worked. They tried it in Ireland, remember. There's many countries that this, this is an old tradition, you know, of replacing one race with another.
Breed them out, breed them out.
That's it. That's exactly
the old tradition King, the story of William Wallace, you know, first night.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And he had sex with any girl who gets married, they bred them out.
You betcha. But of course, that was even back in the days of Abram that happened.
Well, yeah, a lot of that kind of stuff was going on.
Mm-hmm. And but you know, but with the Native American, it didn't work. Almost worked, but not quite.
Almost.
But it was a strong enough belief there that, well, it is. I used to have a publication down, business down in Apache Junction, you know, and I used to do stories. And White River or Whitewater Apache tribe came down and they talked to me. You know, well, I want to do a story on it. And anyhow, the several of them came down. They sat in my office all day long, listening to me, watching me, you know, trying to decide whether or not, you know, I should be allowed to do some of the stories on them. And eventually, they said yes to it. And anyhow, I talked to
the one from down around Sholo.
White River.
Well,
in between there and there's a reservation. I can't think of the name of it. I think it's but anyhow.
That's the one where the Vatican's built their observatory up in one of their mountains.
Mm-hmm.
That reservation.
Yeah, but anyhow, I talked to a woman. Because they okayed the stories, and anyhow, I printed them in my book. But this old Apache lady, she talked to me, and she told me, she says, Mary, she says, we have a thought on this, and she says, this is how it works. She says, they will never own us.
That's right.
Because they don't know what we think. They don't know what's inside of us. We only show the outside. They can capture the outside. They can enslave the outside, but they will never be able to own us unless they know us.
That's right.
And also,
well, there's a movie right now. It's called Rabbit Proof Fence. It's on the cable right now, and it's the same story, you know, only the Australian version. And they could get those people. They couldn't assimilate those people. And at the end of the movie, guy, the actor who's playing the superintendent down there, he says, these people just don't understand what we're trying to do for them. You know, I just laugh. I heard that, you know.
Yeah.
Those people, they're not interested in what you've got to teach them.
Really?
They've been doing their thing for a lot longer than you've been doing it.
Yeah. And I did a study on, what's it called, Chaco Canyon. And you can tell that thousands of years ago, there was a very highly civilized culture going on there that studied astronomy.
In Australia?
Yeah, no, in Chaco Canyon.
Oh, Chaco, yeah.
Yeah, done in Mexico.
Have you seen the Egyptian panels in a very secluded canyon down in Australia?
Well, I talked to Jonathan Gray. He's an archaeologist out of Australia. And he said that, I think it was when President Nixon was able to get into China, they showed him some things that was mind-boggling. They showed him, it was almost like a tourist map, like thousands of years old of pictures and descriptions of the Grand Canyon. Places for the people of China to be able to go to when they got to the Grand, or when they got to Arizona.
Well, you know,
they showed up.
The Fremont expedition to the Grand Canyon, don't you?
Yeah.
One of the guys noticed some of that, what they call desert varnish, that kind of black stuff that gets on the sandstone walls.
Yeah.
Up about 1,000 feet above the river, climbed up there and went down into a cave. It was a gallery of cave big enough to hold maybe 50,000 people. Egyptian artifacts, and there was a story published back in 1909 about it.
Well, I think there was even a Buddha in there, wasn't there?
I can't remember exactly, but the Smithsonian came out,
mm-hmm.
took all the artifacts out of there, blew up the cave, took the artifacts, put them on a boat, took them out in the Pacific Ocean, sunk the boat.
Well, you know, that's all restricted area. They tell people, because of the dangers to the tourists, that no one's to go into that area.
Yeah.
And now tell me how more dangerous that could possibly be than any place else in the Grand Canyon. I mean, face it, the whole Grand Canyon's dangerous. You know, but that whole area is off limits.
Yeah.
Well, I went down to Mammoth, because they're supposed to have a right down there in Mammoth Cave in Kentucky.
Yes.
It's supposed to be an entranceway to the inner cities.
There is.
And
it's a place that the Cherokees call Owasi Oto. And a few of our elders know where it is. The entrance is on federal land. And I know somebody that's been down in there, and they described a vaulted ceiling, painted red with stars on the ceiling. 60 or 17 holes in the ceiling, because I believe the original Cherokee, our version of the Neek is called the OC or Aussie. And the way we built it had a certain number of poles.
Friends, this is the end of part one. Part two will be available tomorrow night at the usual time. Bye now. Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases. Folks, the scriptures say my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you. Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm coming back soon.